This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of Sharp Money live from Las Vegas at our South Point Sportsbook studio. Ben Wilson with you in for Patrick Maher. Amal Shaw is next to me on the desk. Dustin Sweetelson behind the glass. We're trying to stay cool, Amal. It's easier said than done here in the summer heat of Las Vegas. It's toasty in the studio today.
No question about it, and it should be a fun day. We got a ton of day baseball going on, including not necessarily a playoff game since we're in July, but it feels like it in Cincinnati against the Brewers and the Reds there, as the Reds had pulled in the infield in the third inning. So you know it's going to be probably a very low-scoring game.
Yes. American Family Field, to be exact, where they're playing that game in Milwaukee.
They don't pay me money, so I don't need to acknowledge who the sponsor is.
Just call it the keg. Basically what the colloquial term was for those of us who grew up in Wisconsin. Bottom of the fourth inning. A lot of day baseball going on. That's not the only game with divisional implications. We'll get into all of that, as well as some potential NL MVP talk in about 15 minutes. Guests on the show today, we'll have a lot of college football, talking some Big 12 previews, as well as the state of the Atlanta Falcons with SiriusXM Big 12 radio host and Falcons radio analyst Dave Archer in about an hour, 4 p.m. Eastern. Then we dive into the Pac-12. Jordan Watkins, Pac-12 Network announcer and analyst, and the former NFL head coach Jay Gruden stops by at 5:30 Eastern. Jordan Watkins, I'm all coming up at 5.
NL MVP talk for what, 2024?
It's funny because Dustin has thoughts on that.
Okay.
He is the reason we're talking about it.
He is the president of the Ronald Acuna fan club. He gave it out, and to his full credit, he deserves all the credit for it. I think Acuna is now like $5, $6, something absurd. And now we're going to talk NL MVP. Okay.
I don't believe he is our true MVP, and I'll explain more about that later.
All right.
It's also July 26th. That's part of it.
No, that's okay. Listen, we got a lot of college football to talk. You know,
we do.
I mean, it's always fun.
And NFL training camps are now open. There are a number of storylines going on. By the way, I hope that Dustin, you breaking a sweat yet in here? How are we holding up? I'm worried for you, big guy.
I'm worried for me because here's the thing that happened when I moved to Las Vegas. You know, I'm a boxer brief guy, but because of the heat, the boxer briefs by about midday turned to thongs. And I have a feeling it may be coming earlier here because of the air conditioning being broken in this studio.
You know, Amal already has a tough enough job. He covers the fight this week, and he's about to see a very scantily clad men in person, and now you bring up that image, so. You know, come on. Didn't have to go there, but that's how we kick off.
Let's just keep moving forward.
Let us keep moving forward. So what just happened earlier today, as far as some of the NFL news and notes, not that this really impacts things from a betting perspective, Amal. We figured this would happen, but it's at least, if you are a fan of the Carolina Panthers from the betting perspective this year, you have the guarantee now from head coach Frank Reich. Bryce Young is quarterback. He is going to be the day one starter. There were some thoughts that, look, maybe with a veteran and Andy Dalton there, they'd give Young some time to learn the reins, but that is not the case. One day in, he is your starter.
Love it. Look, the Red Rifle last year was fortunate enough, and I would love to know what the backstory is to why Jameis Winston never played in New Orleans last year, and they went with Andy Dalton. Because from a talent standpoint, there's no way I think too many people are selecting Andy Dalton over Jameis Winston. In Carolina, this doesn't come as a surprise. Look, Bryce Young, this is going to be a little bit of a stretch of a statement. If he can stay healthy, and Ben, he doesn't get dinged up too much because of how small he is. This guy has the potential to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. He is that good of a player that size is a factor, and you can't just then say, well, okay, you know, the injuries. But that's a part of it. Like, we've seen it with Tua. Tua is bigger than Bryce Young. The one concern I have is you're not going to have too many guys coming off the corner like Ryan Watts who are missing tackles like he did in the Texas game against Alabama last year. These guys are going to put you into the ground. And can you get up from those consistent hits? We've seen Tua not be able to withstand that. Seen some other quarterbacks along the way. That's the concern I have for Bryce Young. Accuracy, moxie, the ability to sense pressure in the pocket. This guy can do it all.
7.5 win total for Carolina. It's a division viewed to be weaker as a result. Three of the four teams in the division have three of the easiest strength of schedules, according to their opposing Vegas win totals. Here's what the head coach, Frank Reich, had to say as the decision made official, and we will know who is starting week one in Carolina. It is Bryce Young.
Bryce will fool you now, you know, because he's got this quiet demeanor. But I like the way Scott said it. This is a grown man. This is a stinking grown man. And he's in control. He knows what he wants and how he wants it done. And I think that's a good place to start from.
The thing I always wonder with rookie quarterbacks, so Amal, it's about the offensive line. What sort of protection is he getting? Yeah. This is a Carolina offense that by a lot of advanced metrics was top 10 across the board last year. You could argue, Amal, of any position of any team in the NFL, of all 32 teams, no team overachieved more based on preseason expectation in 2022 than Carolina's offensive line. Big reason why it was the first-round draft pick in Ikem Ekwonu. Now you bring in a head coach, Frank Reich, who had his best success at Indianapolis when the offensive line was absolutely humming and giving whatever quarterback he had ample time to throw the ball. How do you imagine that translates now? And is it fair to say that that O-line performance is repeatable, or you expect to step back?
Hey, I think it's repeatable, especially with when you look at what Bryce Young does. You know, he's so good at sensing the pressure, stepping up in the pocket, keeping his eyes down the field, making a throw when necessary, getting out of the pocket when necessary. I think the confidence this team had as they played well down the stretch last year, and you look at the start early on, you get the Saints on Monday Night Football in week two, so you have two division opponents in the first 2 weeks, at Atlanta, New Orleans at home, and then at Seattle and the Vikings and Lions. So you've got five NFC games. This team can be a force. Look, we've talked about New Orleans being the team to beat in the NFC South. I still believe that because their defense. And I think they've got an improvement in Derek Carr at the quarterback. As good as Bryce Young is going to be, make no mistake about it, Derek Carr is without question the best quarterback in that division.
Sure. Totally, totally valid. And Carolina has the win total set basically shaded around the win total from last year. Seven wins, 7.5 right now. Third choice out of the NFC South at 4-1. And that's not only the only team where I look at offensive line and view that to be a catalyst toward team success. How about the New York Giants, who we talked about them all earlier in the week with the Saquon Barkley contract and holdout ending as they amended now what his one-year deal will hold for 2023. But this also comes out today with Andrew Thomas, the young left tackle, given a record-setting five-year extension. Now, we're not talking about the Giants O-line the way we talk about the Panthers.
Right.
I mean, this team was a dumpster fire at the O-line position and still won in spite of it. So on the one hand, you could go, all right, well, you're locking up the one piece you really trust at left tackle in that offensive line, protecting quarterback Daniel Jones' blindside. On the other hand, it's a whole lot of capital to devote to a guy who is one piece of a bottom five O-line, I would argue, in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. And you look at the average annual value given in this contract, $117.5 million, so $23.5 per. Only Laremy Tunsil, Trent Williams are guys right now in that same neighborhood. Actually, this makes Andrew Thomas the second highest paid tackle right now at $23.5 million. Also, David Bakhtiari at $23 million. In that neighborhood as well. I'll tell you, if you're Saquon Barkley and if you're a running back, you're officially done. It's over. You're never getting paid. The fact that they just paid Daniel Jones and Andrew Thomas, and look, Saquon Barkley has been their best offensive player for the last 5 years. You're never getting paid. And to me, if you're a young guy playing running back coming up, you should switch positions. Because first of all, these teams want to get rid of you after four seasons. In essence, look at Dalvin Cook. Right, Dalvin Cook's gone after, what, five years, maybe 6 years in Minnesota? I just think it's a really tough position if you're looking to get paid. Don't get me wrong. I think 99.9% of us would take $10 million a year. But in case you're looking to get $20, $25 million, you better go become a wide receiver.
Well, how about the juxtaposition of all this more than anything, where Saquon Barkley, not only is it his own teammate who's a left tackle blocking for him, gets $67 million in guaranteed money, but also on top of that, you have another story out of another NFC team. Cole Kmet for the Bears is a tight end. 4-year extension, $50 million, and almost 33 of that is guaranteed. So if you're Saquon Barkley, you're going, Kmet, Thomas, or like what are we doing here? But that's the reality of how we value positions.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And to your point, the running back now, minus special teams with the punter and the kicker, is the lowest paid player from a starting standpoint of any player of the 22. I mean, who else is even going to be, when you go to free agency, if you're a wide receiver, you can make $20 to $25 million, offensive tackle, center and guard are even going to make $15 million. Only the fullback, but does anybody use a fullback anymore?
Where's Henry Hynoski at these days? Where's William
Kyle
Henderson Juszczyk, at these days?
Alec Ingold, but
where's Mike Allstott?
Also, as a receiver, there's also a great method if you don't get paid to eventually get paid, and that's go be a receiver for Patrick Mahomes or another elite quarterback on a lesser deal and then have a monster season and someone else like Juju Smith-Schuster will pay you more money.
The issue on the contrary to that, Dustin, is if you're Kadarius Toney and you cannot put one foot in front of the other without tweaking your knee, then it becomes a moot.
Well, he wasn't going there for that. He was going there because he wasn't being used with the Giants, because as much as Dave Gettleman should get credit for Andrew Thomas getting paid and Saquon Barkley, who is an elite running back, and Daniel Jones getting G'd up, he also should take hits for Kadarius Toney being, I believe, his last draft pick on the way out.
Also totally valid. It's just Toney with zero inability to stay healthy, and all that's been the big issue.
I will defend one thing. I saw Kadarius Toney play a ton at Florida. That was a great pick by the Giants. It just didn't work out. Now, guys turned out to be bust, and you sit there and say, how can you make that statement of a guy who didn't pan out? Because you're drafting on what you saw. And I got to tell you, Dustin, when he was at Florida, this guy was an absolute dude.
Oh, no, I like the pick. I love Kadarius Toney's talent, but the issue is staying on the field. And when you look at the draft he was in, I'm trying to find who went after him wide receiver-wise. There were some good guys still on the board, I believe, that looked a little bit more, I'd say, refined than he was. He was an elite athlete coming out of Florida.
Yeah, I am with them, although that when you watch him in person and just and even whether that's person on tape, yeah, like the dude jumps out in a sea where no it is very hard to stand out given the athleticism of your average NFL player.
I agree.
It's just
And Ben, very well put in terms of standing out even in the NFL from an athletic standpoint. That's what made Randy Moss so special, right? There's great athletes everywhere, and you're just better than everybody else from an athletic standpoint. So that's why I think Kadarius Toney was, even though it didn't work out, was a good pick. But, you know, the worst injury guy, we had the Bears graphic up here, and we were talking about Cole Kmet. Remember Kevin, was it Kevin White? Yeah, yes. Kevin White out of West Virginia. I think he was the 7th or the 9th pick. And I think he ended up playing like maybe 12 games in 3 years, if that many. And it was just a ton of injuries, unfortunately. Look, you can't necessarily project injuries, especially if a player has not had an injury history.
Sure. And that's what makes it such an inexact science,
yeah,
as far
exactly
as drafting goes. I don't bring up the Cole Kmet extension and just more of a comparison with Saquon Barkley. Kmet's been a very useful player for Chicago, fits what they want to do in that offense. It's also a $50 million extension. That's a pretty big price tag to pay, though, for an offense that's not proven anything yet.
I'll tell you right now, if Saquon played in Dallas, though, he would have gotten paid better. And the reason why I say that is, and to the Giants' credit, they run it like a business more so than the Cowboys do. Jerry Jones is very, very loyal to his people. And I'm telling you, if Saquon were there, he would have gotten more money. Maybe not an egregious contract, but he would definitely got more than the one-year deal that the Giants gave him.
A lot more NFL talk for us to get to on today's edition of Sharp Money. When we come back, little baseball talk. Goodwin in the NL Central will update you on next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Want to get in on the fantasy action but sick of managing your roster, sick of player injuries ending your season? With Best Ball and DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. This year, Best Ball and DraftKings is bigger than ever. With $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. For a limited time, you can join DraftKings' largest best ball contest ever and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Act now before this offer expires. To start playing best ball, download the DraftKings app using code SHARP. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest and snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scores. No ads, drops, trades, or I should have played them instead. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? Head to the DraftKings app and sign up with code SHARP and start playing best ball today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued is $10. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. And I think with that, Reed, we gave him all shot enough time to go run to the South Point pool, jump in, get out, towel down, and cool off. How you doing, man?
He's good. I'm telling you right now, it is hot in here. And you and I both, we never complain when it's hot. I'm like, listen, I can sit in a sauna and I'm like, oh, still a little chilly. But this is like unbelievable in here today.
This is not good. I'm just letting you know, it's not good. Like, I run hot as it is. I know that's fairly obvious from the optics of me, but this is getting bad.
I got in here today and you're the first person I thought of. I'm like, oh, this won't be good.
It's like but Amal complains every day that it's too cold in here. So now he's getting the opposite.
But I'm not going to complain that it's hot. Like I said that to Ben, I go, I won't complain it's hot, which is fine by me. But it does get incredibly cold in here though. It's like 65 degrees in the afternoon.
You can always add more layers. That's the thing.
That's
you can't,
true.
There's only so much you can.
Oh no, you can take clothes off because that may be happening sometime here soon.
We have a human resources department.
Yes, yeah, so I was like, wait, what else is under that one layer? I don't think anything. We're watching, by the way, of all the TVs we have here at the South Point studio to keep you posted on all the Major League Baseball going on. Big game in the NL Central. Brewers and Reds have split the first two of this midweek series, and it's a nothing game. Bottom five in what's been a very well pitched series so far. Been some timely hitting for both sides. Really entertaining series with the Reds a half game back at the Brew Crew in that NL Central.
Yeah, huge game here and a missed opportunity earlier in the third inning when the Brewers had Christian Yelich at the plate. And who was on first base? Joey Weimer.
We have a similar situation now. Two outs, Weimer's on second, and Yelich is at the plate.
Yeah, I would walk him here. I don't know why you're going to pitch to him. And he gets, by the way.
Actually, maybe it's Terang. It's Terang at second.
It is Terang at second. But I'll tell you what, Yelich has been on fire. He's got 15 home runs this year, and this is a guy that's really been a catalyst for this team so far. But my point is, now he's down on the count 0-2. He's their best hitter. I would rather get a force out, put runners in first and second, take a shot with this lineup. I'm just not as concerned about Contreras beating you at this point in time. I take my shot here. Now, you're in a good position, but crucial game in the NL Central today.
As Yelich, wow.
I'm going to tell you right now, Ellie De La Cruz, the wow. only player in the entire all of baseball that could have made that play.
Absolute rip shot, opposite field in that 5-6 hole, and Ellie De La Cruz laid out to catch it before it hit the ground on the line. Ends the inning. The run would have probably scored that gotten through. A mash by Yelich, who...
That had to have been 100 off the bat.
Oh.
Look, I'm happy that happened now. I wish the hit would have happened to make my point. But we talked about the NL MVP race, and I understand Ronald Acuna Jr. is the MVP. He's likely 99.9999999% going to win the award. But I was looking through some stuff last night, and I think our true National League MVP just got out in that moment right there.
Christian Yelich?
Yes.
Well, first of all, here's the problem with bringing that up with Ben. Ben is a lifelong Brewers fan, born and raised in the Milwaukee area. So, of course, he's going to agree with you. Here's the problem, though.
I'm not, but...
Oh, you're not? Okay, no, I actually am going to agree with him.
Okay, what is the case for Yelich?
Because, so, it depends on how you define MVP. Most valuable to the team or the best player? The best player has probably been Ronald Acuna and Shohei in the American League. But in terms of value to a team, there's nobody else on this Brewers lineup outside Willy Adames that has more than 40 RBIs for the Brew Crew.
And he's hitting .206, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yelich has been a single catalyst who's carrying this team right now to where they're at. And so I get what his point is. We're not going to give it to him from a betting standpoint. He's 100-1 to win it. Nobody's going to get it, I mean, besides Acuna at this point. However, when you look at him and you take him out of the lineup, think about this. Ellie De La Cruz at 6'5", his length and his athleticism allowed him to make that play. If he doesn't make that play, that's a run scored. And I said you got to walk Yelich in that spot. You're not worried about Contreras behind you.
Ben,
I don't want to say it. I don't want to agree.
Look, Amal's saying he can't win the award. Why not? At this point in the NBA season, Nikola Jokic was the MVP favorite. And then Kendrick Perkins went on ESPN and slammed him, and it became this smear campaign against Jokic winning it, and Joel Embiid ended up winning the award when Jokic is the better player.
Well, we'll have to check how many woke writers we got.
Well, no, but what we need to do now is begin the smear campaign against Ronald Acuna.
Listen, forget all that. Before Ben, real quick, though, all I'm saying is that if you take Christian Yelich off the Milwaukee Brewers, they're five games behind the Cincinnati Reds. If you take Ronald Acuna off the Atlanta Braves, they're two, what are they, probably nine games ahead?
What did Ronald Acuna hit in the playoffs the year the Braves won the World Series? What was his batting average?
He didn't play.
Zero. They won a World Series without the guy. How valuable is it to be the best player?
No. You can't use that analogy, and the reason is it's a different year.
Okay, then I did a little exercise. I looked at last night's lineups for both teams, and I got their WAR. WAR is kind of the all-encompassing way of breaking this down.
Wins above replacement.
When you go to the Braves lineup, there are other guys with pretty good WARs in it behind him. Albies, 3.1. Austin Riley, 2.7. Matt Olson, 2.9. Sean Murphy, 3.0. Orlando Arcia, 2.0. Michael Harris, II, 1.5. The average WAR in that lineup, when you take Acuna out for the rest of the players from last night's Braves lineup, 1.95. We go to the Brewers. Above one behind Yelich. The only guys above one is William Contreras, 1.8. Willy Adames, 1.5. Joey Weimer, 1.3. Everyone else is 0.4, 0.6.
Yeah, but the issue, Dustin, is if Sal Frelick was in the lineup last night, you'd have the greatest future Brewer of all time who would be in that. So it's a little bit unfair to do that. He's played in a grand total of 4 Major League Baseball games. I get it.
Okay, but going off of what's been done this year. The Brewers are, last I checked, still in first place in the Central.
They are. Here's why it has been, like, you look at Christian Yelich and not to say, Dustin, you don't watch a lot of Brewer games, but just from an anecdotal sample size, because Christian Yelich absolutely owns the Cincinnati Reds. If you go back to 2018, last 68 games Yelich has played against the Cincinnati Reds. This is a 6-year sample size now. Hitting 300, 20 home runs, over 80 RBI. The guy, if he played every game against the Cincinnati Reds, would be an MVP every single season. And we look at it and go, well, those are the top two teams in the division. The reality is the Reds pitching stinks, and it has been for a long time, and that's what Yelich takes advantage for. He's been a above average player the majority, and I'd say a league average player most of the year. He's been hot the last 6 weeks to get his average up from about 240 through the month of May to now 290 where it is, which is totally good and fine. Not even close to being an MVP candidate.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure this team without Christian Yelich is ahead of the Pirates in the standings right now.
Ben said one thing that's going to make me change sides. He goes, I watch the Brewers more than you do. It's like if somebody comes to me about 80s NBA or 90s college football, you're going to have a hard, hard time changing my mind on things. I'm going with Ben on this one just because I know how closely he follows the Brew Crew.
I just think you take Christian Yelich away from the Brewers, they're one of the worst teams in baseball. You take Ronald Acuna off of the Braves, they're still one of the top one or two World Series favorites.
You know who has the best one-run record in Major League Baseball?
The Miami Marlins.
Wrong. It's now the Milwaukee Brewers. By winning percentage.
Yeah, because okay. They have only one guy who can produce runs for them, Christian Yelich.
It's because they have one of the best bullpens in the game, and they win countless 2-1, 3-2 games because of their excellent starting pitching, and Devin Williams is an absolute stud at the back end.
But there's only one person who they can rely on to put runs on the board, and that's Christian Yelich.
Again, you're looking at a small sample size of recent form. It hasn't really been the case borne out over the full season. And look, I give Christian Yelich credit for this. He has completely changed himself as a player since his back-to-back had the MVP season, finished second in 2019. He's not been the same player since the knee injury when he shattered his knee back at the end of the 2019 season. Looked like a total shell of himself the last 3 years of all. This is the first time in 4 years he's at least looked like a semblance of the player he was, but it's still maybe 70, 75% of that all-star form.
Yeah, it's fair. I think you guys both make compelling arguments. I'll tell you one area we've missed the boat. How the hell have we not been betting every Milwaukee Brewers game under? In their last 12 games, there's been one game that has exceeded 8 runs. They got to 10 in a 6-4 game. Every other game, 11 of the games have been 8 runs or less, and 10 of the games have been 7 runs or less.
And it's a weird thing to say about a team that's 10 games above 500 that you want to bet their unders, and they're missing their second-best pitcher and Cy Young candidate in Brandon Woodruff.
Well, I'll tell you what, Peralta's pitched well today. If he can get out of this bottom of the sixth, again, runner on third base, 2-2 count right now in a tight game. By the way, I'm so sick of teams not sending runners with less than 2 outs and worry about a guy getting thrown out. And then we're going to go on contact with the infield and the ball is literally hit to the shortstop like it's a routine ground ball in fungo practice.
Sure.
And he just throws it right home.
Yeah, Brewers' real MVP is Ed Cedar, because if he was still the third base coach, it would be 1-0 Milwaukee right now. That's all I'm saying. Brewers' second best under team in Major League Baseball as Freddy Peralta gets a big K and gets out of the inning. Rockies, actually. Would you believe that? Rockies, the best under team in all of baseball. All right, when we come back, some big matchups, including in the NL Cy Young race. The two favorites are in action today. We'll preview it next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football guide drops next week. Get previews and predictions for every Division I team and conference, best bets on futures and season win totals, plus an in-depth breakdown of how you can use our betting splits and power rankings to make you a smarter better this season. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription, get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Remember, this offer ends in just a few days, July 31st, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to take advantage of these special offers and become part of the sports betting network. I'm trying to hold my paper up, Amal, to shield me from Dustin, because it's like Uncle Rico back there. I mean,
it's hot, guys. The AC's broken. We live in the desert. This should be illegal. I should be able to file workman's comp against this.
Yeah, my laptop charger just fell out of the socket.
Yeah, everything's
breaking down over here. Sal Frelick, the greatest brewer of all time, just grounded into a double play. Yeah, it's, you know.
You guys should do this. I'm airing out my pits. It's nice. Get a little breeze going.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Where are we going here, Ben?
So much room for activity.
The Diamondbacks and the Cardinals about to get underway in a few minutes. I wanted to bring this up because we have our top two guys, I'm all in the NL Cy Young race, at least on the odds board at the moment. Zach Gallen of Arizona, plus 220 at DraftKings. Spencer Strider, plus 285. Both guys go today. And
yeah.
What's fascinating, too, is this Cardinal-Diamondback series. There was, a 60-cent line move Monday when Adam Wainwright came off the IL for the Cardinals. St. Louis wins the game. Last night, Cardinals blow their 24th game of the year, 24th blown save. And Arizona was the beneficiary. So now you get in the third game of the series, Gallen going, and it's actually pretty evenly split. Opener overnight, minus 160. Gallen and the D-backs still minus 160 consensus. Couple shops have it as low as minus 154.
Yeah, I think it's a good spot here for Gallen. I'd look at potentially the run line here. Jack Flaherty on the bump for the Cardinals on the other side, Ben, and he's had some issues. It's always one inning where he's got a bit of a hiccup. Arizona with a fortuitous come-from-behind victory last night. They score three in the bottom of the eighth inning to get the win against St. Louis. I think a good opportunity to build some momentum with your best starting pitching pitcher going today. So I like the Diamondbacks here. Again, minus a run and a half, plus 140. You're in a very hitter-friendly ballpark at Chase.
I know you don't usually play first fives, but yeah. This is a Jack Flaherty pitcher who has been among the worst in baseball of qualified starters first time through the order. That's usually what happens. Guy, it's like first, second, or third inning, you feel like a crooked number is coming against Jack Flaherty. A lot of times it's been the first inning, and it's why I would be tempted. Normally I would be tempted to look first five, but then you think about the Cardinal bullpen. I mean, if St. Louis just had, the second most blown saves in the division is Cincinnati. Amal, they've blown 15. Let's just say St. Louis had blown 15 games this year instead of the 24 their bullpen has given up. They would be two back of Milwaukee for the division lead.
Yeah, no.
Amazing.
That's a scary thought. You know, the defensive effort also by the Cardinals this year has been subpar compared to what we saw last year. It was unbelievably elite. Now you look at it, they've had so many situations where just the defense has let them down.
No question. And that's why, we all talk about the Angels, right, as far as the trade deadline goes because of Shohei Ohtani. But St. Louis Cardinals, they're starting to be these rumors coming out. And it's funny because I went to school at Mizzou. I have a lot of friends who cover the Cardinals in that St. Louis market. And you see a lot of national stories coming out about maybe Nolan Arenado being moved. And the clear consensus from the people who actually cover St. Louis is just to laugh and say, there is no way these big stars are getting moved for St. Louis. Yet you continue to hear reports like the St. Louis Cardinals will be sellers, yet it's really not in their DNA whatsoever. And it's going to be really interesting what happens next few days.
Well, one of the more unique baseball franchises in the sense that they're always having guys come up and produce that are homegrown, right? Like Nolan Gorman comes up. Jack Flaherty's homegrown. Michaelis is a guy that they had for a while. Donovan, DeJong, Edmund, Jordan, they're always bringing guys up. The issue they ran into this year is they don't have that young arm that's ready to become that frontline guy. And now by trading some of these other veteran pieces aside from Goldschmidt and Arenado, Ben, don't you think they could then replenish that and have that next pitching prospect they need to kind of round out this roster?
You could make that argument. It's just from Bill DeWitt's standpoint, who runs a lot of the operations there, St. Louis has always done things their way. It's been a very old school approach, and they have kind of bucked the trend by going out and signing a Goldschmidt, signing an Arenado. So to me, it's not a situation where they went all in on those guys. They will not now zag and go the other way. And here's the thing: had St. Louis not given away Sandy Alcantara when he was a prospect, not given away Randy Rosarena,
Zach Gallen, right?
Not giving away some of these other guys who are now doing really good things, putting up huge numbers. Adolis Garcia, another example for Texas, it could be a much different story.
Well, the Gallen one I object to because they got Paul Goldschmidt in the deal, right?
Was that that trade?
I don't remember.
I believe so. I'll look it up.
So, but getting back to your guys' point about Arenado potentially, look, Arenado's got 4 years and $109 million left. It's not going anywhere. That's a big number to take on. What a throw.
I made up Zach Gallen. Apparently, he was never a Cardinal.
Okay. I didn't even know. Contreras made a tremendous throw.
I was just going along with Uncle Rico back there.
I know, man. I thought I was assuming just based on Zach Gallen's timeline that it had to be there. This guy's, that was actually pretty good if you were trying to call us out.
No, I mean, I thought I had heard that he was in a deal.
He's been playing too much Immaculate Grid, so that's why.
I was impressed that you guys knew where these guys all started. I was like, wow, this is really impressive.
Well, only because
I was right. Drafted by the Cardinals, third round. Traded, it was Alcantara, Castano, and Sierra. Yeah, he was traded by the Cardinals for Marcelo Ozuna. Then traded by the Marlins for Jazz Chisholm.
Yeah, Jazz Chisholm. Right.
I know everything. Trust me.
It's more that I have so many Cardinal media people in my life, Amal, that every time something goes wrong, it's, wow, sure would have been nice to have Sandy Alcantara on the bump tonight, or sure would have been nice to have Randy Rosarena hitting cleanup, and that's usually the common retort. So you would go run line here, this game coming up, Gallen going up against the St. Louis Cardinals, the other pitcher tonight, Spencer Strider, is in action for the Atlanta Braves, and after that crazy series over the weekend, Atlanta beats Milwaukee 2-3. Now Spencer Strider goes to Boston, takes on the suddenly surging Brian Baio and the Boston Red Sox. Seeing here them all, about $1.70 favorite consensus. Strider is getting some interest here in the market by about 5 cents.
Well, potential bounce back opportunity for the Braves after getting beat up last night by the Boston Red Sox. But I love the way Brian Baio has pitched for this team. He's dangerous. Boston at home plus 150. I think you got to look at the dog here. This is a good spot. You know, Spencer Strider has been in the conversation for National League Cy Young, but I got to tell you, I think it's his strikeouts that stand out for everybody. His last two starts, he's given up 9 earned runs in 12 innings pitched and 3 home runs. It's not like he's overwhelming. Yes, he does have 23 strikeouts during that stretch. He's great with traffic to be able to get out of situations. But, Ben, when you're giving up a hit per inning, not to mention, he's only walked one guy in the last two starts, but still, 9 runs, that's a scary number.
Oh, of course. And think about how good an elite Spencer Strider was in the months of April and May, and his fastball was untouchable. Racking up, it was, 14 strikeouts per 9 through his first 9-10 starts? It was always naturally going to be hard to duplicate that, but at the same time, you would like to see fewer than 9 runs allowed at a 2-start sample. So I look at that, and I go, all right, well, clearly Blake Snell, who we've talked about a ton on this show all over the last couple months, now that Snell's down to 3-1, definitely feels like we are pretty even as far as a 3-horse race, right, Dustin?
Yeah, you know, as someone who has faded Gallen and Strider for like the last 2.5-3 months now, betting a lot of the other guys at longer prices, I've been really frustrated that Strider just has not really moved. At one point, I think he went up to like 10-1 or 8-1, but then bounced back down. I think the issue, maybe this, you guys can tell me if this is right or wrong, this theory. The reason why Strider isn't going to longer odds is because the bookmakers know as soon as he gets to something like 7-1, 8-1, 9, whatever it is, they know they're going to get more action on it, and they're going to have to shorten it up anyway.
I would agree with you. I think this is just kind of a way of protecting themselves. Logan Webb is probably, he's the fourth betting favorite right now at 8-1. And I think he's right where he should be. And right now between Gallen, Strider and Snell, Ben, I think it's there's no difference at this point in time.
Webb, I thought, really screwed his chances by not getting out of the second inning in Washington over the weekend.
That always hurts.
Not a great, Webb had been a beacon of consistency. And then this weekend happened, and the Giants now can't win a baseball game all of a sudden.
The problem is the ERAs just really aren't all that impressive from a lot of these guys right now. That is a major issue they're all facing. I've got Webb at 18-1. I've got Kershaw at 10-1. He's back up to 22-1. Has he missed too much time to be in the mix again?
I think so. With the way Snell has pitched, Gallen's been consistent. I think it'll be tough. And remember, let's see how long Kershaw goes coming off of injury in games. That could be another factor.
That's the bigger thing.
You could have two starts where maybe in the first start it goes 4 innings, 5 innings max. Maybe gets to a 6th inning if he pitches extremely efficiently in the second start. Real quick, I want to go back to Spencer Strider today. 8.5 is his prop bet on strikeouts in Boston. You can get it at minus 105 to the over. Boston right now, the Red Sox are tied for 8th in terms of fewest strikeouts per game at about 8.17 per game. I think I would take a shot with Strider here. I think in situations in Fenway, you're trying to get strikeouts. He's a guy that could do it. He has been tremendous when you look at his K's number. Not talking ERA, homers allowed, or hits. I still think he's going to give you 5-6 innings. And remember, one other thing that comes into play, guys, over the last few years, now that in the National League we've gone full-time DH, you don't have that situation, Ben, where a pitcher's getting lifted for a hitter in a 5th, 6th, or 7th, and let's not say 7th inning because that's too late, but 5th or 6th inning potentially. So it allows you the opportunity to be able to go with a pitcher like Strider to be able to get over 8.5 strikeouts.
9 or more strikeouts in his last 6 starts. And you talked about for Strider, last 2 starts have not been great. 9 earned runs combined, but still made it through 6, still struck out double digits. 10 Ks, 2 starts ago against the White Sox, 13 against Arizona. So one of those situations where maybe you are getting, because I've most of the year, Strider's been at like a 9.5 juiced over.
Yeah.
This is a rare time you get Strider at maybe a bit of a discount as far as the strikeout props at 8.5. Good game later on today, 7:10 Eastern there at Fenway, Braves and Red Sox. When we come back, it's college football media day season. We have one team maybe off the beaten path we're going to talk about as a result.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSiN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. We were talking earlier about Sandy Alcantara, the origin story there. Alcantara actually really good today. Rays continue to struggle. Zach Eflin and the Rays go down 7-1 as big $1.80 home favorites.
Track wall out.
Tyrone Taylor, welcome Track back to the show. Out. Gone.
What a huge blast in the bottom of the seventh in a scoreless game. This has been a tight, tough series. Last night, 4-3. What was the score two nights ago?
It was 3-2.
3-2. I mean, these have been one-run games throughout, and what a big-time blast. Lively gives it up, and now...
Brewers 2, Reds nothing. I was told by Dustin Swedelson that nobody outside of Christian Yelich was capable of driving in runs.
I didn't realize Tyrone Taylor was back in the big leagues. But, Ben, I have a very difficult question
I didn't know
for
either
you.
Until a couple of days ago.
I have a difficult question for you that it's going to take a lot of analysis on your part. Are the Brewers actually good?
Can I answer that? Offensively, no. Pitching-wise or defensively, solid to yes.
But, like, in a playoff series where it's already going to be low-run scoring and not having to rely on the long ball like some other teams where things get a little bit tighter, a little bit more stressful, does the fact that they constantly have to grind out these low-scoring games maybe benefit them?
To an extent, but the ceiling is – the Milwaukee against an Atlanta Braves would have no chance in a best of seven series. It would remind me of how the Brewers matched up against Philadelphia in the 2008 wild card series when the Phillies won the World Series. Where if it's a lineup that has legitimate hitting top to bottom and also the general pitching to match, Milwaukee is going to be overmatched. That's just the reality, and they will try. They can't throw Devin Williams every single night for multiple innings. It's just not possible, even though they would love to get to the eighth and the setup guys have been really good. But with the hitting the way it is, a bottom five team against lefties, righties, any situation, I don't see it. I still view them as a playoff team, which everybody has been fading the Brewers all year in that division. I think Brewers have a legit shot to be in there, whether that's a division winner or a wild card, but they're not advancing once they get there.
I'm selfishly asking because I have a 40-1 ticket on them from the preseason. They were like my favorite World Series bet.
I remember that.
But I've literally ignored that ticket up until like the last 2 weeks from like, they're really not going to lose that division. They're still in first place. Like I was writing the ticket off and now I'm trying to convince myself that I'm all back in on Milwaukee.
Real quick, before we go full Biff Poggi on the 49ers and make him mad again. Listen, Ben, the only people that remember that 08 series besides people in Philadelphia are people in Racine and Sheboygan and places like that. I had to pull up a county map of Wisconsin. I don't even know. I mean, like, I had no clue.
There were grown men crying in the stands on September 30th, 2008, when CeCe Sabathia pitched a complete game, game 162, and the Brewers beat the Cubs 2-1. Right then, as everybody watched on the Jumbotron, Wes Helms hit a game-winning home run for the Florida Marlins against the New York Mets to send the Brewers to their first postseason since 1982.
Well, Wes Helms is going to be a good pollinator for Immaculate Grid.
That's what I'm helping you out for. Yeah. Great Brewer Marlin.
Screwed up the name, too. I was like, I got like four names ready. You know what?
You just happened to pick one of the harder.
Well, I like the name. That's why I went with
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
The Racine I knew because Crom Butler's from Racine.
Yeah.
And so Sheboygan is... the kid who played at Wisconsin for the Houston, Decker.
Yes.
Decker
could have gone Melvin Gordon, Kenosha.
Oh, he's from Kenosha.
I thought you were going to pull out a Oostburg or something. Those are just, totally random.
They would have been hard for me to go with. I already screwed up a fairly
Cleveland, Wisconsin,
one.
Home of Bob Wickman. Great.
Is it Eau Claire?
Yes.
Oh, got one.
I had a tennis scholarship offer. Well, not Division III. I had an offer to play tennis at Wisconsin, Eau Claire.
Nice.
The Blue Golds did not do it, ultimately. Anyway. This is a great transition to what did you say while we go full?
Full bit Poggi. For people that are unfamiliar in the Conference USA situation at the media days, he got how many
AAC.
They just moved.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. They're in the American now? That's right. Oh, my God. They got upgraded. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so he was a little bit annoyed that they weren't getting enough attention yesterday at AAC media days. Here was the end of his media availability.
Any other questions for Coach? That's it? Three questions? Maybe that's because you have us ranked last. That's all what you think of us. So we get that message. Thank you.
Atta baby. Biff, get a little, little podium slam for good measure on the way out. You and I have been in many a press conference room of all. You've never been afraid to ask the tough questions.
I've gotten thrown out.
Which is great. I haven't. I got yelled at by Gary Blair once, the former Texas A&M women's coach, for not covering the team enough, I guess, even though I was just a play-by-play guy. Anyway, What would you have done in that situation? I want to know what Amal Shaw
said,
in the room.
I would have said, Coach, listen, you've got a plethora of transfers. The only program that has more transfers than this team is Colorado. I don't even know. You know, it was funny. Dustin and I talked last night, and he came up with the idea, let's talk about the 49ers. Nobody's talking about them. Here's the problem, Ben. When you look at them right now, all these guys are transfers. I mean, you've got your starting quarterback that's coming out of the SWAC. It's hard right now to be able to quantify who these players are. These guys are guys that Jalen Jones right now, he's a senior transfer. He's already been at two other schools. Started going through their offensive line. They've got three guys that this is their third school.
Well, how about they have another quarterback who left the program and is now coming back, Dom Schaffner. He was there in 2020. He got hurt and missed the whole year in 2021, transferred to Eastern Illinois a year ago, and now he's back. So they don't even know who their quarterback is.
Real quick, guys, out of their 44 on their two-deep roster, how many guys do you think were on the team last year?
Nine.
I was going to say seven.
Ben's a little bit closer. 13 out of 44.
Wow.
And in terms of starting, you're only looking at 6 out of 22.
Well, new coach.
It's 27%.
New offensive coordinator. New defensive coordinator.
Yes.
Brand new conference. Well, this is not a program with much tradition. It was just formed. They were an FCS school about a decade ago, then transitioned to D1 and win total of 3, one of your lower ones in college football. And there's not many reasons to advocate for an over outside of the fact that it's just so dang low that 4 wins get you over.
Well, they've gone over 3 wins twice in their history.
That's great for them.
Yeah, you know, sometimes look,
congrats.
He's a hedge fund guy. His background is a hedge fund. He ran a high school program in Maryland, had great success. That's why you look at the situation right now in terms of coordinators they brought in on the offensive side of the ball. They go get Ryan Osborne. Greg Brown was the previous OC there. He comes in from Maryland. He was a co-offensive coordinator there. It doesn't surprise me that they've got a lot of influence from that part of the country.
Well, and Biff Poggi just spent the last few years as Jim Harbaugh's associate head coach at Michigan. That's the key here. His ties are to Michigan. That's where they went and got Osborne. Osborne and him had ties to the Wolverines. He was with the Ravens. And then apparently this OC, Mike Miller, people think is up and coming for in offensive circles in college football. We'll see if he can do something with this offense. But it's the defense, I think, for Charlotte that needs the most work.
Yeah, you're right on that one. I misspoke there in terms of the offensive coordinator is Mike Miller. And on the defense side of the ball is Osborne.
And so anytime also you're looking at these group of five teams, non-con becomes so important as far as can you steal a, and that's where you look at it. All right, how many wins are you realistically looking at? Do get an FCS opponent at home to open the season, South Carolina State. And outside of that, the rest of the non-con at Maryland, Georgia State, now an FBS team as well. Similar path of Charlotte, former FCS have made the move now to full D1. And then at Florida. So you're looking at most likely one in the non-con, depending on how you view a Georgia State team. And then the rest of the AAC schedule, a bunch of difficult spots throughout there, and now that you move into a new conference for the first time.
Yeah, I think the under is a prudent play here. Where are they getting 4 wins on this schedule? I think it's going to be a real challenge when you look at it. They're not going to be able to get there. You know, he took this job because, based on his age, he's probably not going to get too many other opportunities elsewhere. So good for him in terms of what he's been able to do by getting a head coaching job. It's not the easiest thing at 64 years old, but he winds up there at the 49ers. If he can get a turnaround here, he'll get an opportunity. But it's going to be a tough one. This is primarily a commuter school. You don't have the support. It's not going to be easy. So, and let's be real here. You're down on Tobacco Road area. It's more basketball. It's not football in that part of the country. So it will not be easy for the 49ers. 49ers basketball team has been pretty solid. You look at last year at home. I can tell you right now, I watched a ton of 49ers men's basketball games. 49ers football, you might catch, for me, I might catch one or two games throughout the course of the year.
Well, they rebranded, like that's a new logo. The old 49ers logo was awesome. Back in the mid-2000s, Charlotte and Marquette, back in the early Conference USA days, Dwayne Wade and the Charlotte 49ers had some great battles on the basketball court, but football, not so much.
No, you're absolutely right. It'll be a challenge. And I mean, look, we gave them some conversation that most people, for me, I don't know about you guys. If I don't follow a team or a league, I just don't bet on it much. I think you're better served trying to stick to what you know, or in theory, what you know, as opposed to reaching out on certain teams in situations where you don't know it that well.
I at least like the conversations like these, though, more than the general sports talk of, all right, well, Harbaugh suspended four games. Yeah. Like, this is at least bettable stuff where you can can look at a team like Charlotte, and if you really dive deep into the conference, you can feel like you have an edge here.
So for the record, neither of you are going to go 5,000 to 1 on DraftKings for them to win the national title?
That's bad odds. It should be 100 million to 1.
Basically. I just want to know if Biff Poggi learned what he did at that press conference from Kevin Borsis. Do you remember him? The old Michigan women's basketball coach who had one of the great post-game press conference tirades of all time in front of about six people.
I do not.
He slammed the podium and said, "We choked. Our team is a disgrace." It was awesome. Now the UW Green Bay women's coach. Anyway, hour number one of the books here on.